This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Been following the polls? Public opinion surveys are a regular feature of American life in and out of the campaign season. But of course, they become hotter commodities when the race is on, and hotter still when the race is close. Why are so many people obsessed with polls? What do polls do for candidates, and how do they influence voters? Thomas Jensen and Andrew Taylor join us in this discussion now about how polling works and why. Tom's director of public policy polling in Raleigh. They've been characterized as a Democratic-leaning firm. Andy Taylor is a political science professor at North Carolina State University. Tom, Andy, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Andy, let me start with you. Talk a little bit about the history of polling. How long has this been with us?
Well, at the level that we see it today, probably 20 years or so, the intensity and the frequency with which we see polls, let's say within the presidential race, probably for that long. I mean, there are a whole host of outlets that do these tracking polls, which are daily snapshots of where the electorate stands on the presidential race. Polling as a regular kind of thing in American public life, probably since the end of the Second World War. Gallup, for example, has a famous time series of presidential approval, asking people, you know, do you approve of the job President X is doing? And Gallup's time series in that goes back to the end of the Second World War. But there are polls done before that, I think. Generally attributed as the first poll is a poll done by the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania newspaper in the 1824 presidential election. There were polls sporadically done in the early part of the 20th century. But, you know, the intensity, the level we see it today, probably about 20 years.
And, Tom, give us an idea at public policy polling. How do you poll? How do you go about gathering the information?
Well, we do our polls through automated telephone calls. So people get called, and then they'll get asked a question like, do you approve or disapprove of President Barack Obama's job performance? If you approve, press 1. If you disapprove, press 2. And then people are able to answer the polls through pushing the buttons on their phones.
Kind of interesting, because then you're using landlines, right? You can't use cell phones, can you? Can you call cell phones?
No, you cannot call cell phones with automated polling. So that is one of the challenges.
Well, it is. Does it filter then? I mean, are more young people using cell phones? And, you know, is there a filter there? And is it skewed almost automatically because you're using landlines, do you think?
Yeah, whether you're calling cell phones or not for your polls, poll respondents really do tend not to be terribly representative of the population as a whole. Women are a lot more likely to answer polls than men. Older people are a lot more likely to answer polls than younger people. White people are a lot more likely to answer polls than minorities. So that means that for all pollsters, regardless of what method you're using for collecting your interviews, you have to do a lot of weighting of the data on the back end to make it really representative of the electorate as a whole.
And weighting based on what? Then what's your baseline? What do you go back to?
We'll look at the three things we wait for on our polls to make sure we have a representative sample are gender, race, and age. And to determine the targets for those, we look at a variety of things. We'll look at census data. We'll look at exit polls from previous elections. And those kinds of things sort of combined lead us to project that the electorate will be a certain percentage female, a certain percentage African American, a certain percentage young voters, and that sort of thing.
And Andy, when we think about the changes that have taken place in polls, you talked about modern polling going back 20 years, but I remember the days when there was the Harris poll and the Gallup poll, and they were largely horse race polls. They would poll a certain number of people and ask you who you're going to vote for, and that was it. But now the data is parsed so many different ways. I can look at if the election were today, most likely outcome on November 6th, and that sort of thing. What are the different ways in which polls sort of represent the information, Andy, and how much has that changed?
Well, we have a tremendous amount of information now when we poll the electorate or the American public generally about their attitudes on things. And so, You know, we can, even if you just use the presidential election as an example, we can know a little bit about that sort of top line figure, which is proportion of people who, and of course you can break in a variety of different groups. You talk about registered voters or likely voters who are going to vote for one candidate or the other. But then we ask all sorts of other questions. Obviously, some of the most important ones are the demographic characteristics that Tom talked about, but you can also ask them about their opinions on particular issues, and you can find out whether people who believe in or take a particular position on a particular issue are more predisposed to support one candidate over the other, which of course is very important information for the campaigns themselves, because they're looking at trying to touch the right buttons and bring over certain parts of the electorate over to them and to supporting them. So it's just tremendous amount of information that we glean these days, and the frequency that the polls are administered these days, and by such a wide variety. Frank, you just mentioned Harris and Gallup, but of course there are many, many outlets these days, news organizations, independent outlets like Tom's, outlets in universities, for example, that we just have such a wealth of information. It just doesn't compare to anything that we had in the past.
And does it really have an impact on the direction of the campaigns as the campaign goes on?
I guess that in one way, yes, in that the candidates, there's a constant feedback loop of information that the campaigns are using from polls. They don't just poll to say, oh, wow, we're doing really well, or oh, terrible, you know, this is bad, we're doing poorly. They poll to try to understand what the electorate is thinking, and of course they respond in that way. That's one obvious effect. Another effect is possibly on the voters themselves, and that is a little bit harder to demonstrate, although some people believe that there are these kind of bandwagon effects, and that, you know, people will be motivated if they see that the candidate they kind of like is doing really well. They'll be much more motivated to go out and vote for him than they would be if they saw a person was doing poorly. And so that's why the candidates themselves talk up their positions in the polls and saying we're doing really well, rather you never hear them saying we're doing poorly. When races are seen as being close, a lot of the research shows that that can increase turnout, that one of the important motivators of aggregate turnout in the electorate is competitiveness. And, of course, one of the major ways we glean competitiveness in a race is if we see that the candidates are polling very closely to one another.
Tom, do you do some of your polls for the parties themselves, proprietary polls that are for their eyes only, and then others that are for public consumption?
Yeah, our business is based on doing polls for a variety of Democratic candidates for office, and also progressive-leaning interest groups and political groups and that kind of thing. There's basically two kinds of polling companies. There's sort of media pollsters, which do their polls mostly for the benefit of the public. That's your Gallups and Pews of the world. And then there are campaign pollsters that do polls to help candidates and organizations sort of set their political strategy. And we're kind of unusual within the polling landscape where we do both of those things. We're kind of a hybrid of a company putting a lot of polls out in public, but also doing a lot of polls privately.
That's kind of interesting because people do have the perception that polls somehow have an influence on voters and that the pollsters are kind of in cahoots in some cases, I guess. Has that ever happened to you?
Well, there's been a sort of an increasing amount of suspicion towards pollsters this year. Republicans think that the pollsters all intentionally including too many Democrats in their polls to make President Obama look like he's stronger than he really is. But then as things have sort of gone a little more sour for President Obama over the course of this month, since things have tightened up a lot after the first presidential debate, you've seen a lot of Democrats throwing those same arguments at the pollsters. So people's emotions are very high this year about polling in a way that we haven't really experienced before.
Well, and I think you actually get some emails from both sides that suggest that maybe you have a couple of samples here you can give us to show us just how intense the feeling is about the polls themselves.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we put out a poll showing Mitt Romney slightly ahead in Iowa and New Hampshire, where I think the president's been expected to win. And we got an email that said, you really should quit the polling biz since you've jumped the shark. So since you've been exposed as fraudsters, you can just close up shop now. Mm-hmm. No one I know takes your silly and absurd right-wing biased poll seriously. You're just a bunch of GOP shills, which is sort of ironic given that we're a Democratic polling company. But then yesterday, we came out with a poll on Sunday night that had President Obama up by 4 points, and we got an email saying, you are either incompetent pollsters, delusional in your assumptions, or intentionally trying to skew your poll to benefit Obama, or maybe you are all three of these. If Obama supporters riot in the streets after he loses the election because your erroneous poll showed that he was ahead in the polls, you will be complicit in any resulting violence and damage. So that's the kind of thing we're getting from both sides.
A lot of pressure. Well, Andy, what about that? I mean, if you're polling for, you know, for candidates of one party or another, or progressive issues or conservative issues, I mean, is there a built-in bias? I mean, it seems to me that any company to stay in business has to be pretty close to accurate most of the time, or, you know, you're one cycle and out. But I wonder if there's a way that you can see over time biases built into one company over another.
I'm not sure that of that directly. I mean, Tom touched upon the fact that, you know, there are obviously enterprises that have different client bases, and you tend to have a certain kind of client base, and as a result, an association with that client base, you're considered to be leaning that way. I think a lot of the problems that come in interpreting the information, even in ostensibly even-handed polling, is sampling issues. And we've touched a little bit about that. Tom talked about some of the obstacles that they have in getting a good sample, particularly with the increased challenge of cell phone technology these days and the widespread use of cell phones and people no longer having landlines. But also I think there's a kind of sociological thing here, and people are kind of, there's poll fatigue, there's a pervasive distrust of pollsters, which also means it's very difficult to get a good sample. And then the other problem is with question wording. And so you can have different kinds of wording of questions based ostensibly on the same issue. But because of the way the question is worded, you can sometimes get quite dramatic different outcomes and results. And so pollsters have to be extremely careful with those kinds of things. And I think sometimes candidates and or clients will be very interested in a particular kind of approach to an issue. That will influence the question wording, and of course that will provide a very different kind of outcome than you would get if the same issue was asked in a different way.
So, Tom, I guess that one way to do that is to go back over the actual results, compare it with your projections, and then what do you do? Go back over the questions to see where some of the gaps might have been closed a little bit? How do you do that, your post-mortem?
Well, at the end of every election cycle, we sort of look at where our polls were and what the results ended up being, and look for different things we should be doing to maybe tweak our results. To give an example, in 2010, a lot of our polls at the end of the election actually ended up skewing slightly to the Republican side, even though we're a Democratic polling company. And what we realized was that there wasn't a big imbalance in Democrats and Republicans starting to answer a poll, but Republicans were more likely to actually finish answering the poll than the Democrats were. So some Democrats sort of weren't making it through the final screen because of that. And we've made some changes to our polling for 2012 to try to address that issue. And we're always just looking for those kinds of things where we can sort of tweak what we're doing and make our polls hopefully more accurate.
I wonder if, does Hurricane Sandy have any influence on polling? Let me start with you, Tom.
Well, we've suspended our daily national tracking poll. We suspended it for yesterday. We didn't want to be calling into the areas getting bombarded by the storm as they were getting bombarded. We also were scheduled to start a poll in Virginia last night, and we decided to delay that for a little bit until the storm passes too. I think we're probably going to get back on our regular schedule now. Certainly, there are still people in the Northeast without power, but I don't think it's a large enough percentage of the American population to really throw off our numbers.
Andy, you mentioned polling fatigue, and I just wonder if the with the proliferation of polls and the way the numbers come at us sort of every day, if in addition to fatigue, people are becoming a little more sophisticated about it. In other words, they're not quite innocent in the way they answer. Is that could that be part of it, and could it skew results?
It possibly could be the case that people are like that, and maybe even having a little bit of fun with pollsters. And trying to get their own back, perhaps, you know, as revenge for being having your dinner interrupted. All of these things are very, very, of course, very, very difficult to model and account for. We have really no idea how much Tom just mentioned the drop-off that they had from Democratic voters in 2010, but we don't know in a systematic way how much what type of people tend to not want to respond to pollsters or perhaps respond insincerely. There's been a little bit of research in the past done on this with regards to race, for example. You know, there was talk in the run-up to 2008 that the polls may be overestimating Obama's support, largely because people would want to tell pollsters for social desirability reasons that they were going to vote for an African-American candidate. These are white respondents, but then would actually not do that. But I think what happened in 2008 disabused us of that, and that perhaps there aren't quite as great racial effects as we'd seen in the past. So we're constantly trying to calibrate to take into account those kinds of things. And in many ways, they're much more difficult to do so than the technological challenges like the cell phones.
Andy, I've got about 30 seconds left, but I wonder in the grand scheme of things, are we better off for having this information in the public? Does it serve any good? Would we be better off as an electorate not to know poll results, not to have them? And I don't mean that we should censor them. Obviously, we're not going to. But just in the abstract, do they help the process to have this information out there?
Definitely after the fact. Before the fact, I'm not quite so sure. In fact, there are some countries where there is an embargo on polls just before the election. That may be not a bad idea, but certainly after the fact, it's very, very important for us to understand our electorate and for our policymakers to understand the feelings that the public have and the positions that the public has.
I want to thank you both for being on the program today. Andrew Taylor, political science professor at North Carolina State University. Thomas Jensen is the director of public policy polling in Raleigh. Thanks for being on the program, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, a program that you can find on the web at stateofthings.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.